Welcome to Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm Linda Holmes, and the team is here in the studio to talk about the Oscars. And we're up pretty late to do it. Stephen Thompson, can you verify the time?
I can, Linda. It is 1:44 a.m. And now that we know how the night played out, we can talk about some of our favorite and least favorite moments.
We've got your Shape of Water, your Frances McDormand, your Jordan Peele, your Gary Oldman, your host Jimmy Kimmel, and many more. We're wrapping up the 2018 Oscars on this episode of Pop Culture Happy Hour.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from ABC. Presenting American Idol, the singing competition that started it all, has a new home on ABC. And the journey to find the next great American singing sensation is about to begin. Superstar judges Luke Bryan, Katy Perry, and Lionel Richie join host Ryan Seacrest in the search to find your next American Idol. Premieres Sunday, March 11th at 8, 7 Central on America's network, ABC.
Welcome back. You just met NPR Music's Stephen Thompson. Also with us is Glenn Weldon of the NPR Arts Desk. Hi, Glenn.
Hey, Linda.
Stephen, you had a tweet that you thought kind of summed this all up.
Yeah, I've got this from Richard Rushfield, tweeting in all caps, and I quote, "Anything can happen and didn't."
Yeah. It's true. To take it from the top, The Shape of Water, directed by Guillermo del Toro, won Best Picture. The acting category is right down the line, exactly as predicted. Lead actress Frances McDormand in Three Billboards. Lead actor Gary Oldman in Darkest Hour. Supporting actress Allison Janney in I, Tonya. And supporting actor Sam Rockwell also in Three Billboards. So those were all completely expected.
Absolutely as expected.
All played out as expected. Guillermo del Toro also Best Director. Mm-hmm. Adapted screenplay James Ivory for Call Me By Your Name, which I think was pretty, you know, Glenn has talked sometimes about how the Glenn Award for screenplay is often that's where you find the Glenn movie.
Yeah, it's usually the consolation prize for a movie that's too small, too interesting, too weird for mainstream acceptance in the big category. So yeah, so I was pleased to see it. It was James Ivory's first Oscar after a very, very long career. Mm-hmm. So it's a consolation prize. I was consoled.
And then over in the Best Original Screenplay category, that was where you got your big award for Get Out for Jordan Peele.
Which I think was probably the only legitimate surprise of the evening.
It was the only time I was really surprised.
And I wasn't that surprised.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought like it could have been Three Billboards. It could have been. But if Three Billboards wasn't going to have the big, big night that people thought it might have, it was maybe not going to win that either, in which case it was a little bit more open. I wasn't that surprised, but I think you're right. I think that's the closest we came to really being surprised by anything. You know, Best Animated Feature was Coco. It was sort of, I don't know.
I think a telecast like this bears the weight of inevitability. And sometimes as a viewer, you're just watching hoping to be surprised. And sometimes that winds up manifesting itself as, I don't want to be disappointed.
Yeah.
And, you know, none of us in this room are big Three Billboards fans. That particular category of original screenplay was the award I least wanted it to win, because I think almost all of its problems are in the screenplay.
Yeah.
And that screenplay was up against my three favorite movies of 2017, Get Out, Lady Bird, and The Big Sick.
Yeah.
This is the category that carries all of my emotional investment. So just when one of those films won, I was so happy that I think it felt like a surprise.
Yeah, I get that. In general, it was a night when the awards were kind of spread out.
Right.
Although I think The Shape of Water comes out, you know, ahead in the sense that it's Best Picture.
It won 4 out of 13.
Yeah.
There are a bunch of ways in which it's a kind of a balanced evening. You ran some numbers for us, and they're 4 for Shape of Water, 3 for Dunkirk, all of which are tech awards.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And then you have a whole bunch of things that got 2.
Yeah. Coco, Blade Runner 2049, and Three Billboards. You know, the big four, I call them.
That's a grouping, because one of those for Blade Runner 2049 is the cinematography Oscar that Roger Deakins finally won on his 14th
streak
try.
The streak is over.
He's the Susan Lucci.
There's hope for all of us.
Cinematography, there's hope for all of us. Shutouts, The Post, and Lady Bird.
Lady Bird, yeah.
Oh.
Lady Bird went 0 for 5.
That one hurt.
Man, that movie's so good. And if you come away from this award season, get out The Big Sick and Lady Bird. Please see those movies. I love Lady Bird so much.
Yeah.
Yeah, but see, Greta Gerwig is still very young. She's got time. This is the thing. Yeah. This is the encouraging thing. Same thing with...
Timothée Chalamet.
Timothée Chalamet. Same thing with Kumail and Emily. Like, I mean, there's time.
Well, this is what I said about these awards while they were happening is, on the one hand, I did find them sort of depressing in the sense that they were everything that was expected. And, you know, I would not have given these acting awards the way that they went.
Right.
However, at the same time, you can feel, you know, all this talent from Get Out and from Lady Bird and from The Big Sick and from all these things that are a little bit more kind of unusual and that feel electric in a certain way.
Call Me by Your Name.
Call Me by Your Name. You can feel the energy from all this and all these actors who are new and interesting where you're saying, I cannot wait to see what the next Daniel Kaluuya movie is.
Yeah.
And even when you are seeing the current really hot and interesting actors up on stage, this actually happened when Kumail was up on stage with Lupita Nyong'o, people started saying, like, where's the rom-com?
Yeah.
And this happens now almost every time you get people who are just where you know you haven't seen everything that they can do, whether it's them or other people. So the energy of the evening was very exciting to me, even though the actual giving out of the awards was a little bit...
I was very pleased to see A Fantastic Woman win Best Foreign Language Film because I really thought once The Square, the Swedish film The Square, had won the Palme d'Or, then I thought, okay, it's over. But that is such a smart, original, personal little film. I'd add it to the list of Stephen's list. If you're going to come out of this, hopefully more people will see that film now that it's won the Oscar.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about the broadcast itself. So this is the broadcast that comes after several months of intensified, concentrated attention on, you know, what has come to be the Me Too movement and the Time's Up movement. You know, Me Too, as several people have reported, is a, you know, is a name of a movement that goes back a long time to Tarana Burke and work that she did with women of color. But it managed to kind of come together over the last several months with a broader group of people with a somewhat different focus. And so this was the Oscars following Harvey Weinstein being kicked out of the Academy, which Jimmy Kimmel referenced in his monologue. And Harvey Weinstein, you know, a big movie guy, but particularly associated with the Oscars. And so there was a question, I think, of what they were going to do about this. And what they wound up doing about it was Kimmel did some work around it, but the heavy lifting was Ashley Judd and Annabella Sciorra and Salma Hayek, who are three of Harvey Weinstein's accusers, who came out on stage and spoke, you know, in sort of general terms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And on this 90th anniversary evening, when the Oscars celebrates timeless classics, we also look forward as well.
And we work together to make sure that the next 90 years empower these limitless possibilities of equality, diversity, inclusion, intersectionality. That's what this year has promised us.
And they introduced a segment that was about representation more broadly. It wasn't just about this. It was about representation more broadly. But I didn't feel like, other than Frances McDormand's acceptance speech.
If I may be so honored to have all the female nominees in every category stand with me in this room tonight, the actors, Meryl, if you do it, everybody else will, come on.
When she spoke about, again, representation and made reference to something called an inclusion rider, which all of a sudden everybody was, what's an inclusion rider?
Yeah.
Okay, look around, everybody. Look around, ladies and gentlemen. Because we all have stories to tell and projects we need financed. Don't talk to us about it at the parties tonight. Invite us into your office in a couple days, or you can come to ours, whichever suits you best, and we'll tell you all about them. I have two words to leave with you tonight, ladies and gentlemen. Inclusion rider.
And this is probably the best thing she did in that speech is get everybody to be like, well, what's an inclusion rider? It is, by the way, a thing you put into a contract that says they have to achieve a certain level of diversity in the hiring of cast and crew on a film. And you can, if you have power, put that in your contract.
Yeah.
And so that's what she's encouraging people to do. And just the fact that we're having this conversation, that the people on Twitter were saying, well, it was sort of one of those things where it was like, how's it go up? Peas and carrots. What's an inclusion matter? And that's probably the most significant thing she did. But other than that, it did feel to me like it was sort of diffuse.
Oh, I think the politics were kind of diffuse, as well as the awards from category to category. If you think back all the way to the before times of the Golden Globes, 2 months ago, God, you know, Seth Meyers had some very, very biting material about Weinstein in particular.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And this felt a little more general in its approach and a little less kind of mercilessly hard-hitting. And I mean, Harvey Weinstein, his shadow cast over many, many, many Oscars telecasts mm-hmm. over the years, where his kind of campaigns to get some of these movies, you know, your Shakespeare in Love beating mm-hmm. Saving Private Ryan can in part be traced back to a Harvey Weinstein campaign. It felt more muted than other awards shows of its kind.
It was a low-energy monologue, but Kimmel is low-energy. He doesn't come out and be like, it's a wonderful night for us. That's not him. And it is, in many ways, the toughest job in Hollywood.
Yes,
there's no way. There's no way to win this thing. And we were talking, Linda, you and I, about how different this Kimmel seems than the Kimmel of the Man Show
in
the day. And how he feels like he's not keyed to the moment, but in stepping back and letting women talk about it. I think it's just a smart thing. I mean, Seth Meyers did something similar where he basically said, I'm going to step away from this. I mean, I do think it was interesting that we saw him more than we normally see an Oscars host throughout the evening. He kept coming back to do a little low energy bit and then got off as opposed to, you know, somebody like when it's Neil Patrick Harris, big, huge number at the beginning and then kind of goes away for the entire thing.
But in terms of what you said, Stephen, about the difference between what Seth Meyers did and what Jimmy Kimmel did, I think what Seth Meyers did, making it very specifically about the kind of defanging and dethroning of Harvey Weinstein, mm-hmm. was maybe what people were looking for at that time.
Yeah.
When I was listening to Kimmel, more of that monologue was about power and pay equity and the ubiquity of harassment mm-hmm. everywhere.
But what happened with Harvey and what's happening all over was long overdue. We can't let bad behavior slide anymore. The world is watching us. We need to set an example. And the truth is, if we are successful here, if we can work together to stop sexual harassment in the workplace, if we can do that, women will only have to deal with harassment all the time at every other place they go.
And so in a way, I sort of felt like, yeah, I don't want these to all be Harvey Weinstein jokes for the rest of everyone's life.
I hear that.
I want them to be jokes about Hollywood and about the broader issue. And I think that's one thing that some of the people who have been involved in this movement have been trying to say, not only the people who have pointed out there have been plenty of activists working on this longer than the last, you know, 8 or 9 months, but also pointing out that this is not just about Harvey Weinstein. So for me, shifting that to Kimmel saying, you know, pointing to the Oscar statue and saying, this is the most well-liked man in Hollywood. He keeps his hands where you can see them and he has no penis.
Right.
Oscar is the most beloved and respected man in Hollywood. And there's a very good reason why. Just look at him. Keeps his hands where you can see them. Never says a rude word. And most importantly, no penis at all. He is literally a statue of limitations. And that's the kind of men we need more of in this town.
That joke to me is of this moment, mm-hmm. that makes sense.
He repeated a bit with a bit of an inflection that he did last year. So instead of bringing a bus of regular folk into the ceremony, he went across the street to a theater with big stars. And that's supposed to be an outreach that we're all the same. And all it is it kind of reinforces this Hollywood elite versus regular folk kind of thing.
Well, it's like, aren't you excited, you regular people here to watch a movie? Here's famouses. Like,
we're going to fire hot dogs at you.
Also, they're at the movie to see A Wrinkle in Time, which isn't even out yet.
They were at a special preview screening of A Wrinkle in Time, and all of a sudden it's like the movie stops. They're in what looked like this very intense Oprah Winfrey moment.
Yeah.
This could have, perhaps this was all fake, and they were showing the trailer and then later they were going to show them the movie or whatever.
I'm sure they all signed up releases and whatever.
But what they made it look like was that these people were sort of in this climactic important moment of the movie, and then all of a sudden it's like, hey, it's Jimmy Kimmel coming up the aisle with, you know, he's got Gal Gadot with him. And I'm like, what? I don't know that everyone wants that necessarily. Yeah. Now, look, Armie Hammer firing a hot dog cannon. That's
as
pretty
it were,
funny.
Here for it.
So to speak.
That's pretty funny. And I did like it better than when they brought the busload of confused normals into the Academy Awards. I did think this was better, but it's dumb and it wasn't necessary and I would lose it.
Okay, so speaking of time fillers, I talk about this every year at the Oscars. A salute to the movies.
Yes, you do.
The montages in which it's like a scene from Sister Act, a scene from Silkwood, a scene from, you know, Monsters vs. Aliens. And you said on Twitter, Linda, like, I actually like these montages. I like being reminded of movies I like. I like seeing a lot of different kinds of movies bunched together and kind of given equal weight. I think they're so boring. And it's a 3-hour and 50-minute telecast. And if you cut out several of those, you'd have maybe a 3-hour and 40-minute telecast that wasn't full of all that junk.
It depends on the montage.
Sure.
I will take up, first of all, for the actor and actress montages.
Those are fine.
That they were doing, where you would get a whole bunch of different performances, which, first of all, would make you think, oh, yeah, I want to see that movie again. And also, that would make you kind of realize, particularly in the supporting categories, the breadth of work that's been recognized in those categories. I appreciated those montages. I think where the rubber hits the road in terms of our potentially friendship-ending disagreement is where it's sort of a general, like you say, I'm not going to say it in your little voice that you use, but your salute to the movies ones. Did you ever see the dancing montage that was the Walk the Moon, Shut Up and Dance with Me thing?
Sure.
It was so good, and it was good because it was meticulously made, and I think it got taken down at some point. But the point is, it was very carefully made so that everything lined up and it had a purpose and a flow. Mm-hmm. And when they make them so that things come together, so that you'll have, like, here's a bunch of different uses of dance in film.
Sure.
Then I think they're great. When it does look like it's just a bucket of clips that they got from, you know, other past Oscar shows and they just used, like, the A through D for this montage and the E through J for that montage, then I don't like it.
Yeah. When we've talked a lot about this whole notion of dreams made of shadow and light.
Yes. You guys both have voices for that.
Yeah.
Well, now you have to do it in a Matthew McConaughey voice.
When McConaughey came out and stared down the barrel of the camera and said, movies.
Movies. They're an illusion, literally a magic trick. Still frames projected on the screen to trick the eye into seeing movement and life.
You really did. You lost it.
Movies are illusions. I was like, ah! I thought he was going to say dreams, but he said illusions. Okay, I'm going to take it.
It's the biggest surprise of the night.
The biggest surprise of the night.
And then he said they're a magic trick.
They're magic tricks. Oh, my God.
Yeah. And I think that's a pretty good stopping point. I think that brings us to the end of our little Oscars chat. Tell us, by all means, how you felt about the Oscars. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or tweet us at PCHH. We will be back later this week. Thank you, Glenn and Steven.
Thank you.
Hey there, I'm Joshua Johnson, the host of 1A. There are lots of places to debate today's issues if you don't mind getting attacked for speaking your mind or asking a simple question. But 1A is different. You'll find the 1A podcast on the NPR One app or wherever you listen to podcasts.